The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefer, and this is episode number 127. Super excited you're with us. Really appreciate you showing up each and every week. This week, I'm really excited to have Al Vermeil. Al is one of those giants in the field. There's a chapter in my book where I talk about making sure that we recognize the people that have come before us and paved the path for us as strength coaches. And Al, Coach Vermeil, is definitely one of those guys. Coach is one of the only strength coaches, or he's the only strength coach that has a championship ring in both the NFL and with the NBA. He's been a head strength coach with Major League Baseball as well. Worked with Chicago for all those years with some of the greats, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, and on and on and on. And 2003 he's elected to the Strength Coach Hall of Fame. And so there's pretty much nothing that Coach has not done in the field of strength and conditioning. And so really took it as an honor to be able to sit down, talk with him a little bit, listen to the stories. That's the best part. I mean, that's where you really get to know the motivation behind a guy that's had a successful career in this business. And there's not too many of those that have lasted the test of time. And so we get into that a little bit. We talk a little bit about, you know, some of the mistakes that he's made along the way, some things that he's very proud of in the profession, some things that he thinks that also need a little bit more being worked on to get better, and just, you know, some really cool stuff. I mean, he's got an order of development, or an order of developing training components that we discuss. And, I wrote 3 pages of notes, and so if you can't get something out of this, there's really something wrong. So I want to get to this episode. Before we do, I want to recognize all of our sponsors. We have Elite Form, PlayUSA, and Sorinex, and of course, Ignition APG. And Ignition has a speed certification that I took a couple years back. I think it's top shelf. It's a really good certification, and it's nice to be able to. I've used it this way the last couple of years where, you know, whenever you're sitting in those meetings with coaches, with players, with parents, with administrators, and to be able to say you have a certification in something specific like speed carries a lot of weight. And we all know that there's a lot of things that you learn throughout your course of your academic career that, you know, sometimes you feel like a certification won't necessarily be that much more. I got a ton out of this certification and sitting for it and the conference that went along with it. But, you know, it's nice to also be able to have that credential to flash out there. And so Ignition has a speed system certification. They have it on demand, on site. You would have to reach out to them for that, or they're having their big conference and certification in April of next year. So go to ignitionapg.com, check that out. Reach out to them, and they'll give you some more information about it. But couldn't recommend it more. Also, can't say thank you enough to all the people that have left reviews on Amazon for the book, The CEO Strength Coach. Again, I've just continued to be amazed by the impact that this book has had on people, as well as, you know, the impact it had on me as a coach, you know, and just really forcing myself to sit down and put my thoughts to paper. And so, if you haven't gotten it, reach out, you know, to either Amazon or go to CEOstrengthcoach.com, pick up your copy. But also, wanted to make sure that I let everybody know that if you're interested, several people have done this and reached out to me, but if you're interested in reading this book as a staff, reach out to me. Let me know what you're talking about. And if I can get you a much better deal, I will. It really has nothing to do with making money. It has everything to do with just trying to make an impact in the profession. And so please reach out, and I'll let you know if I can get you a better deal than what's on Amazon right now. So want to get the Coach Vermeil, sit back and enjoy. I know you're going to get a ton out of it. We'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, super excited to have Coach Vermeil with us, Coach Al Vermeil. Coach is a guy that I've followed for many years, had the opportunity and pleasure to hear him speak several times, and thank the world of him. So, Coach, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Coach, if you would, I know you get asked this a ton, but, you know, just real quickly, briefly, so we can get into the meat and potatoes, you know, kind of why did you get into strength and conditioning, and kind of what's led you down this road?
Real quick and simple. I started lifting weights in 1960, January 7th, because it was freshman high school. My parents, my brothers, realized I wasn't going to be big enough to play college football. And the late Bill Wood, my brother Stan Dick's high school football coach, who was way ahead of his time in the 50s, came out and gave me my first program. It actually was kind of a copy of Alvin Roy's. So I lifted all through high school, and by the time I was a senior, I was the fastest kid in school. Now it's 150 kids, so the only talk I'm competing 75 boys. But I ran the 100-yard dash in 10.5 through the shot put 55.
Wow.
And I went to junior college, and then I played for Dick at Napa, went to Utah State. I was lifting all the time. And then when my first coaching job at Castle Roble, Gary Collinborn said, "Will you lift the weights on the off-season program?" So I did that there, went to Kansas State for a year under Vince Gibson as grad assistant, back to Castle Roble. Then I went to Moreau High School in 1973 and was there to 78, and I ran the off-season program, and that's where I met Don Chu, got into plyos. I did some Frank Costello downhill running, and then Bill Walsh, who I knew for many years, he knew of me through Dick, offered me the job at the Niners. I went there as a strength and conditioning coach. Obviously, they weren't going to bring me the 49ers and let the outside to run the option and play vanilla zone defense. So I was there 4 years, and I realized I thought I had more to offer, so I started my own business, and I developed the timing device that made back in the late 70s, early 80s. Don and I worked on a device, and I finished it, and it would go measure a high jump, up fast, change direction, all those things. And the Chicago Bulls sent players to, White Sox sent players to me for a couple of years, and they brought me to spring practice in 85, and they offered me a job with the White Sox and Bulls, and I went back to Chicago. I was technically a consultant to my, I didn't want to be their employee for a different reason. And I was with the Bulls all those years, 23 years, with the White Sox a couple of years, but after four general managers, so I was no longer there. And that's how I, you know, it really stems from Coach Wood giving me that strength program and the encouragement of my family.
No, that's awesome, Coach, and a great story, and one that we talk about quite a bit on the show. It's just that you don't just, it's not an overnight success. It's a long journey, and, you know, obviously you've gone through it. In your process, you know, one of the things I talk about on the show quite a bit is, I think to navigate this profession and do it in a expedited way, you've got to learn from other people's mistakes. You know, you've got to learn, people have already traveled down the road that you're traveling. What are some of the mistakes that you think you've made, and how did you learn from them in this profession?
Is this program going to go 24 hours?
I'm the same way. That's why I think it's a great question.
I think the biggest thing is, a young strength coach, you're out there looking for some magic secret. You know, there's got to be some magic. And I'll tell you, I learned that there is no magic. And I learned the most important thing is, you're a better strength coach with a better athlete as your coach. That's the key.
No question.
The other thing, in terms of mistakes, when you get a very, I'll put the terms of mistakes in a little different context. There are no absolutes. I mean, when I, you know, and I didn't even know anything about periodization. We just trained, because that's the way I trained. But over the period of years, you know, all your cycles are 3 weeks work, 1 week unload. Well, I found from training my son Lance and other athletes that were a little fragile, that I would go 2 weeks low than 1 week unload. There are no absolutes in what happens. So instead of mistakes, I started learning that things that were taken as dogma, you know, it's like to get bigger, we all have to do 3 sets of 10. Well, I found out when I was in college 100 years ago that by the time I was 20 years old, I never did more than 4 86 reps, and I kept getting bigger. Well, I read many years later that the big, the fast twitch fibers hypertrophy more than the slower twitch fibers. Charlie Francis is the one that really confirmed this. He said there are no absolutes. I mean, for example, there's been a lot of controversy on the internet about, oh, we shouldn't back squat, we shouldn't front squat, we shouldn't load. Well, I'll tell you what, last time I played college football, and I don't know how many of these guys say they never played, but I played at Utah straight, and my sophomore year, we were in the top 15 for a while. And I played against Murphy Morris, All-Pro, Dwayne Thomas, All-Pro, Jimmy Kidd. Well, you know what? And I tackled some guys about 40 pounds heavier than my running back on our team. We had three really good ones, was a guy named MacArthur Lane.
Yeah.
Rushed for 1,000 yards. Well, the fact that I squatted extremely heavy, now it took years to get there. You have structural. Everybody looks at the squat, as my good friend Rob Panarello says, and looks at, oh, it's the glutes, it's the quads. But just holding that bar is a strength. And if you've got kids playing contact sports that can't do it, I don't think they should be playing contact sports.
Agreed.
That teaches their structure. And what we've got is, ooh, we got to do everything on one leg. There's nothing wrong with single leg. But we all trained on two. You know, and when I was a high school coach, I had total control because I was a dictator. It was a Catholic school. There was no, there, you know, I had 51% of all votes. We had one varsity player in 6 years get a knee injury that had to have surgery. I had three kids in the whole program, so that's over 600 kids.
Wow.
The only single leg stuff we did, and that was later when I met Dom, we did bounding, some hopping, but we were always sprinting. So in terms of mistakes, just to summarize it, don't take someone's word for absolute. Don't lose your common sense. If you're going to hit someone, just for example, if you're a 225-pound linebacker today, and you can't squat at least 1.5 to 2 times your body weight, if you can't squat 1.5, and you're going to take on a 250-pound running back, it's illogical. The other thing is you got to watch absolute statements. Some people think this joint should be mobile, this should be stable. All joints should be mobile, and all joints should be stable.
Agreed.
So absolutes will get you in more trouble than anything.
No, I couldn't agree more with that. You mentioned earlier Alvin Roy and just, you know, the profession and where, you know, it's come to now. What are some things that you're most proud of? I mean, you're one of the guys that paved the way and pioneered this thing. What are you most proud of, and what do you think that still needs to work?
Well, what I'm proud of personally is those high school kids I coached at Murrow High School in Castroville and the championships. We won 9 championships at Murrow on all 3 levels in 6 years. And when I got there, they never had a winning varsity football season. So I'm so proud of those kids and the efforts, and they're all under review. And in terms of Alvin Roy, I guess what I'm, you know, if you want to pick him up, you know, I've got the Boyd Epley Award, which was very gratifying, and the Hall of Fame things. And I think two things I'm most satisfied is the high school I coached at. We did the stadium, really did it right, and then we named it after.
So oh, wow.
The other thing is, I was just with the 49ers 2 months, and I was asked to do a coaching clinic. And when I got done with my speech, Mr. Roy, I didn't call him out, Mr. Roy was in the audience, raised his hand. I said, Mr. Roy, what can I do? He said, I am so glad I'm leaving my profession to young people like you. He died within a week to 10 days.
Wow.
And that's, I mean, he's the godfather of us all. Him, and there's another man that people don't give credit to in Chicago, named Clyde Emery.
Yeah.
Clyde was a class lifter, and he had the Bears working out in the YMCA because Stan Jones told him back in the 50s. And I said, we'd really like to see the NSCA and the strength coaches organization recognize Clyde more. He didn't get the notoriety that Alvin did, but I've got Alvin's original strength book.
Oh, wow.
Charger one, but the one before that was the great coach down there, Paul Dietzel, and the name of the book was The Chinese Bandits. Of course, you could use that today, but it's his original strength coach book, and it shows Billy Cannon lifting.
Wow.
Billy Cannon was 220 and ran 109.5. So
unbelievable.
those are, you know, some of the things that I'm proud of, and I'm extremely grateful for all the people that shared their knowledge with me. So many sports scientists, and coaches, and physical therapists, and people, experts around the world, like Carmelo Bosco, Don Chu, all the rest of Panarella. There's you know, Dragon Rook, on and on and on. So.
What do you think are some things that, you know, now, you know, where the profession's headed, or where, you know, where do you think that there can be still some improvement in the strength coach and strength and conditioning profession?
Well, if you want me to be honest with you,
go back.
I think the strength coaches need to go back to being coaches. What I mean by that is I coach track and field. And actually, with the Bulls, I was coaching my son's team, and Texas, you know, worked with me, so I got involved. So I coached other sports. And when you learn to be an on-the-field coach, especially in football, we have large numbers, you have to use small phrases, and you have to coach on, as Coach Gibson would say, you got to coach on the run.
Absolutely.
Vince taught me a lot of things. He was a tough guy, but you got to coach on the run. And you have to deal with large numbers. So, by coaching team sports, you learn to handle mass numbers. By coaching individual sports like Olympic weightlifting and track and field, you learn biomechanics. And I think that's what. The other thing, my recommendation for the future is go back to them. Don't get caught up in all the gimmicks on the internet. Geez, you know, I look at them, you got 10 million. I see all these guys, oh, we evaluate this, the left toe didn't move here, we're going to spend 6 months. No one's symmetrical, no one's perfect.
Right.
Here's my thing about why I say back to the future. You come in, you're an athlete. First thing I want to test is how fast you can run. If you can run fast, you can jump. But the most important test, I want to ask the coach who's bringing you in, or a scout as it be, pro football, pro basketball, can they play? If the guy tells you they can't play, there's nothing you or Alvin or any of us would ever help them. So if they can play and you can run fast, if you can play and run fast, what's that tell you about your ability to change direction? You got it. But you test change that. The next test is overhead squat. If you can run fast, you can play, you can run fast, change direction, you can overhead squat. The only other test, and I'll give you other ones, but the other test I would do is 90-second box test. You take a 12 to 15-inch box, it's 40 centimeters, we use 12-inch box. And okay. You stand on one side of the box, you jump up on top of it sideways, then the ground, how many times can you touch that top of that box in 90 seconds? Because that, you know what, Coach? A guy with no heart, one thing he will do is get you fired.
Yeah, no question.
And as Al Miller would tell you, and who was another great friend and helped me a lot, is that'll make a bulldog hug a hound. If you've got speed, and you can play and you've got speed, and you can overhead squat, so that shows you've got mobility, then start, you can do some other things, then start your training progression slowly. Now, you talk about mistakes I have made, is when you get a good athlete who's explosive and coordinated, you tend to accelerate his program beyond his level of preparation. And then all of a sudden you start to have problems, aches and pains, because even though he can move the weight faster, he can do the plyos, he hasn't had the preparation to prepare the body to handle the stress. That is one, and that is so easy to do with young kids. Oh, you get to go, oh, look at him do this, and all of a sudden you forget, wait a minute, they haven't done the basic things. So foundation of work capacity is so important.
When you talk about that, you had sent me a couple slides, you know, the order of developing training components, and, you know, just briefly, I mean, you know, go through that, because I think that's such great information for especially the young strength coaches that are listening, and just terms of having a systematic approach to your training, to your evaluation, to how you go about working with your athletes.
I'll post it on your website.
Absolutely.
You can post my email address in case someone wants to ask me.
That'd be great, Coach. Thanks.
The only thing is, if people have a question, send me an email with the phone number, because I won't write the answer. basically what it is a simple approach. Rob Pamela now uses the Orange 40-something medicine, sports medicine from New York, uses it for rehab too. You look at a client's or your athlete's attitude. If you've got a loser, get them out of the program. I'm not in the business of rehabilitating.
Yep.
I mean, if they don't want to work, there's nothing you're going to do. Then you evaluate them. I told you about evaluation. Now, if you get someone that's not, there's another further evaluation that allows you to know, I would do the squat or static vertical jump, regular vertical jump, repeat vertical jump, you know, to look at different things, you know, what they've got there. Work capacity on the pyramid is general condition.
Yeah.
Easy medicine, ball throws, but fine. Charlie Francis's tempo, which we've used for years. You run 100, I'll put it in yards. You run 110, walk 50, do four of those with a 150 walk after the end set. And then you do another set. And you'll do three sets. And eventually, we worked up to about 2,200 yards. We'd do a set of four that way. Then we'd alternate 100, 200, 100, 200, 50 of walk in between, 150 walk between sets. And we repeat that set, and then we do another 4x100. Hmm. And then we'd work up the medicine ball through. It's 800, it's easy throw. Now there's a way you can combine that medicine ball. This is great for indoors. And we used to have the bat, I said, guys, you're never going to run further than the gym. I mean, oh, this is great. Throw the ball off the wall 20 times, stride down with the court, about the pace of a basketball, throw 20 more. We do those in set of 10, so it's 200 throws, but we would do up to 800 of those.
Hmm.
Great way to get work capacity. And I'm not worried about flexion. Here's here's one of my pet peeves. Oh, don't move this way. Don't move that way. If you watch sports, flexion, what do you think prevents, if you're in football, and I've got a great slide I'll send you. There's a kick being tackled from Michigan. What do you do when someone goes to hit you? What's the first thing you do? You drop your shoulder.
Yep.
What are you doing? You're going into flexion. What do you think keeps you from going into extension?
Right.
Flexion, strength of those boxers. And there's a great picture of Flojo running in 88. You ever see that big, the big hip flexor, tensile fascia on him?
Mm-hmm.
You ever see anybody running fast that didn't have big hip flexors?
Great.
It's this whole thing today of, ooh, ah. You know, and again, I'm being a little repetitive, but the young strength coach just, football, hockey, all sports have some violence in it. So you build the work capacity. It's in the work capacity you deal with certain problems. I believe, and I talked to Bill Kramer about this, that a good general work capacity will take care of most of the deficiencies you see. So, but take the time. And now we had standards set for that.
Right.
On what you should do before you move. We used, I've got another guy that had a great influence on me, Steve Javorek. We used the old Javorek complex. And
I trained with Coach Javorek.
Oh, he's a great man.
Yep.
Steve Javorek's a great guy. And I gave the complex to Titleist. That's where I got this hat, TPI. They use it. But we always felt the barbell complex, a male should at least be able to do 40% of his body weight for at least a couple sets of six. You know, now shorter guys can go probably a little heavier. Females, we thought 30. Strength, the next part is strength. Now, once we get the strength, that doesn't mean we're not doing a little easy jumping. So what I'm saying to you, coach, is I don't want to use the word whatever, the congenital training or whatever. I never
helped
you know what that means. But we would do a little of everything. In other words, we concentrate strength, but we do a little sprinting and a little jumping. And then when I say strength, I mean pull, squats, press, and we're working our Olympic technique. Because my point being is, if you do all one form of training and then switch the next, you get soreness.
Right.
But the emphasis was getting stronger. Then we went to what you would call explosive strength. So that's the Olympic lifts. Explosive medicine ball throws. What I like to do is, Charlie has a thing when we do medicine ball jumps. You know, you're jumping with a medicine ball. Then the next thing is plyometrics. You know? And then the last would be speed. But when we're doing this, as we get to the explosive strength in the pyramid, the plyometrics start to creep up a little bit in intensity. Right. So when the time we get to the other one, we're ready to handle and speed. Now, you see this nice pyramid. You know what I did with the Chicago Bulls? Not what they did. I said, "What? When looking at them physically, what quality would make the biggest difference? They get shaped.
Right.
They didn't have one or two guys yet. Okay, they've been jumping all their lives. They've been plyometric. Speed, they only have to run, they only accelerate about 10.
Right.
People say, what'd you do? We lifted. What'd you do on Tuesday? We lifted. What'd you do on Wednesday? We trained them 5 days a week.
Wow.
Sometimes. They weren't strong enough. That's the quality they missed.
Yeah.
So if going, I'll put it in another academic terms. If you were going to college and you were great in history, you were great in English, but you never had any math, you wouldn't start them on trigonometry.
Agreed.
We lifted. That made the single biggest influence. And the other thing is, I know from studies from Cale, the biggest thing you start to lose during season fatigue sets in is strength. And the other thing when fatigue sets in, you start to lose your ability to absorb.
Great.
So we just lifted, and we lifted on game day. Of course, and a lot of guys, we would lift heavy, not a lot of volume, in the morning of the game, and they'd come out at night and feel good. We did that. Let's say they played Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, I didn't want to lift them, but if they had a game Thursday, we'd lift 20, 30 reps.
Wow.
So
I still remember seeing
that. Yeah, we'd stuff the medicine ball. I wish I was playing again football, because I would do that in the morning of the game. Here's what you find. If your kids sit around all day in a hotel, I hated that, waiting for a night game, you're lucky. But if you got up in the morning, even if you did some box jumps, some explosive medicine ball throws, when they went to the game, they're going to be ready.
Right.
I know, and Horace and those guys loved it. And it really started with a guy named Dave Corzine. Dave's another guy. You talk about Owen got things. I owe a great deal to Dave Corzine, because he was the first guy to buy in. And he said, Alan, he wasn't real explosive. I got a lift on game day. I got to feel tight. I had no idea what he was doing. So we'd go out of sight, out of mind. Well, when I started to figure out what he meant by tight, that he got his muscles, he prepared the nervous system so he could activate.
Right.
The other things I owe a great deal to, and I thought about my career, is Jerry Krause, the general manager of Wolf. And don't believe all the crap you read. He's great. He treated me unbelievable. And Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner. Whatever I needed. I mean, my budget, I had $20,000 a year to bring people in.
Yeah, that's what's fantastic.
And with young coaches, if you want to learn, read the book and then go see if they practice what they preach.
Yep.
It's easy to write a book and do a video, but can you coach?
Agreed.
That's why I go back. Learn to coach on a team sport level. Learn to coach the individual sports.
Well, same with that. What do you know, the young coach now, and a guy that has been able to sustain a long career in this profession, what advice would you have for somebody that's just getting in, that doesn't understand, you know, the volatility of the profession, or, you know, the ups and the, you know, the ebb and the flow of the deal?
Here's my thought, because I had a couple opportunities to move the Bulls when I was here. Go out and don't worry about your next job. Do a great job at the one you've got.
Yep.
And then eventually you'll move up. But once you get yourself and you've got, here's the key to being successful. When I went to Chicago Bulls, I said, I don't want to be hired by the owner, because everybody else comes and goes.
Right.
My contracts, and I know this sounds, somebody who listens to me said, Ramil, you negotiated with Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause? I said, yes. And that way, it's like if I was going to college, I want the athletic director, not the football coach, because they come and go with the women. You know, and we're already losing NFL coaches, college coaches early in the year.
Yep.
So, and once you get in a good job, and don't look for the negative part of it, because there's always going to be negative.
Great.
Once you create a good job, keep making it better, and don't realize, oh, the guy down the street, but You know the devil you're going to dance with.
Yep.
It's like divorce. You realize if you get married a second time, your chance of divorce is 50% greater. You know, I see people get remarried and they go, oh boy, you know, this would be great. Well, everybody puts their best foot forward. Yeah, but then when you pull the covers over, you You know, it's still marriage. You know, everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses. So here's the thing about young coaching. You want to become good. Go study from people. And don't just go study from the guys on the internet.
Yep.
Who are always tooting how good they are. You don't see me do that because I'm only as good as the people I work for and the young people, the high school kids I coach and the professional athletes I coach. And yep. I coach some females along with it. It is not about you. The minute you think you did it all, and here's a piece of advice. You said the best piece of advice. Bob Devaney, I was a young coach, and I played against Coach Devaney's team. I think he said, and he said, never become too impressed with yourself because the size of your funeral depends on the weather. And the minute, and we all make that mistake, we have all the success, and we think we've got all the answers, and then, you know, the other thing, young coaches, don't be afraid to realize you made a mistake. The worst thing about making a mistake is not admitting it and correcting it.
Absolutely.
You know, about training cycles, we did this with Horace one time and the other guys. We would train real high volume one week and go way low the next, and then up and then down. Well, it's not written in a book.
Right.
You don't have to read a book. So, and you know, when I said there are no absolutes, there are people that probably shouldn't back squat. If you've got disc problems, but if you've got facet joints, you're better to back squat and not front squat.
Great.
You know, there's, you know, if people say, well, I can't get a guy to snatch, and you couldn't find it. If you can't do either, do high pulls. If that doesn't work, use a method.
Find it. Yeah.
No. The other thing is, don't coach anything you don't know and can't demonstrate. I watch people do things. I go, when I'm on the road, I'll go to the, you know, little gym someplace to work out, and I watch these personal trainers. And not all of them. I don't want to paint a white brush, but I see some of them just are on the trend of the month. You go back 2 years later, and you can see someone else. Yeah, they read something else.
Right.
So be a little bit suspicious and realize there are no secrets other than get better players than the other guy.
Yeah.
That makes I'm a lot smarter coaching Horace Grant than I was other people. So, he cleaned 300 from 6 inches.
I've seen the video.
Oh yeah, it's probably all over the video. And I asked for it. You know, here's the point is I asked for it if I could give it to people.
Yep.
But I mean, other guys, Paxton worked hard. Right? You talk about a tough guy. Oh, and you know, we had Purdue and King, Scott Williams, BJ Armstrong.
Right.
I mean, all these guys, Scotty Pippen. Oh, you know, I remember when before he was a superstar. Great guys. Those guys, you know, they wanted to work.
No question.
And at the end of my career, when they all went to the personal trainers, and I semi-retired in 01, but really Eric took over hell from there. I saw the kids have a different attitude.
Yeah.
And if you can do anything, you've got to create an attitude. And someone asked me once, well, what have you done if you'd have stayed in the NBA? I said, I had a plan, what I would have done. And the key is to get the agent on your side.
Yeah.
Not make him suspicious of you. Mm-hmm. And there's a way that I had a way that I think would have worked with someone. But I don't know if I answered all your questions.
No, that's great. I'd like to, you know, dive in a little bit more with the, you know, as a guy that's been in this profession for a long time, your advice for young coaches trying to make a difference in the profession for the future. What needs to be done to take it to the next step?
For the business or for the individual?
For the business.
A more professional appearance and a more professional mannerisms, and you know, it isn't bad to smile and laugh a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know, I worked my high school kids, and like I said, I had an iron fist on, and I was no different than with them the whole time. I had everything wasn't third one, so I had to be upbeat. And, you know, Charlie Young, who played for the 49ers, told me, he said, you know, the greatest thing you did for us, Al, I said, yeah, Charlie, I don't know. He said, every day you were positive. And the other thing with young kids, restate that question because there was a point I want to make. in the profession. I said, make an appearance. Talk like a professional.
Right.
Every work doesn't have to be F you. And, you know, I see young coaches go to clinics. And the first thing they're interested in is going to bars.
Yep.
You go to a coaching clinic. You, if there's someone talking, you go up and hound them to death. I drive people crazy with questions.
Right.
When I was coaching, we'd call Lou Holtz about the beer. You can't let that get a hold of the best, but go watch them. Don't take the word for it. And if they say this is the only way to do it, this is the exact, there's no variation, walk away.
Yeah.
Because there's, I've learned, there, you know, if you were to look at me train, I've got all these tools, and I use some tools more for some people than others. And, you know, Billy Cartwright couldn't do certain things, so we adapted.
Right.
And you just have to be a little adaptive, and you have to treat each person as an individual. You can't, you know, you have to have group control, group discipline. I understand you can't have guys being crazy. But having a little bit of personality and present yourself professionally to your superiors. I gave Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause's reports. They'd see this guy's gotten better at this. Just don't go down in the weight room and ignore those people.
Right. Right.
And here's the last. I would have professional athletes play the Vermeil Sports and Fitness Open. We had a golf tournament. And if you've never seen anybody slice at the golf ball and see a 7-foot guy hit a ball, it doesn't go across one fairway. It goes across to the next. Then I'd have them at my house for dinner, or I'd take them out. And years later, I've had some of them come and say, you know what, Greg, the best thing was we enjoyed going to your house to dinner. Now, these are guys that could go out and buy a $200 dinner every night.
Yep.
It's that personal touch. If that's part of it, if it's not, don't copy anybody.
Right.
Don't try to be me. I was one person. But you can't be Don Chu. You can't be Al Miller, but you can learn from him. You talk about a guy. I call Al Miller the John Wayne strength coach. So I watched him work with guys. He had the right blend of get after him, but a sense of humor, a little bit. So I think that I've went out to UCLA and watched Pete Alosi. I watched David at Ball State do a great job. I mean, there's a lot of guys. Jack Macy out at Oregon State does. There's a lot of people doing great jobs. Jonas Serration down at North Carolina, the basketball.
Yeah.
Be yourself, and that's the best advice I can give. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
Oh, that's fantastic, Coach. Well, you know, it's such an honor to talk to you, and you know,
honored to be in the show, Coach.
Well, thanks so much. And this is the blessing in this that I get is that I get the opportunity to talk to some of the guys that I look up to, and you know, there's no doubt why you were a success in this profession, continue to be a success in this profession. Your humility, the wealth of knowledge, and I just hope that everybody takes multiple note pages and notes like I did, takes your advice and seeks out people, because it is such an art. It is such an art, and you have to go and you have to learn how to.
Science.
What's that?
Francis said, coaching is art form based on science.
Agreed. Couldn't say it better myself. Coach, thanks so much for being on the show.
Coach, and you talk about a guy's influence. Charlie Francis influenced me a great deal. We were very close personal friends. And I don't care, regardless of things, he was still one of the best that ever. And if people want to understand him a little more, go on Netflix and watch Ben Johnson 30 on 30.
Yeah.
That was, you know, it's like he was the only guy.
Well, Coach, thanks so much.
Thank you, Coach.
Appreciate you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game. Chalk Talk.